It is the East-West Hot Stove. And, gentlemen, a chock full of playoff goodness, I would say, this week. Let's start out West. And he's a nominee for the Norris Trophy. But I do believe, Al, that we need to spend a little time talking about Brent Burns, because there is some sort of coming out party going on here in the postseason. Because a year ago, this guy was a forward. What do you make of the play of this guy and how far he's come?
Well, I think there's a lot to be said, and you're playing your right position. I can't say, I mean, who knew? A lot of people were saying, should be a forward, you can do this, you can do that, but that position's tough enough if you're there all the time. And once you've been established that you're going to play defense, he's just been terrific at it. And he's brought more than just, he's obviously on the ice, to be a finalist for the Norris. He's done everything so well, the team's playing so well. But I'll tell you, just watching him play, and I get this feeling with Subban too, it's like the Winter Classic all the time. He's having a blast. He's not making the big mistakes that he made previously, whichever position it was. He would make those dangerous plays. He's taken some of that out of his game. But the exuberance that he has, and to play at that high level, and to just feel good about it. I mean, I know it's not the biggest market, but when you watch it, you're part of it because of the appeal of the beard, if you will, or the way he dresses coming in, or the snakes, or whatever. It's almost a back in the day an Al Iafrati-esque approach to thing, but with a huge talent level. He is a terrific coming out story for the NHL this year, for the Sharks certainly, and certainly as one of the premier defensemen, and he belongs definitely in that category for the award. And you know what? A lot of people like to extend it in the postseason, if you could. To me, he's been the best defenseman in the league, if you include the postseason.
Well, I think there's no doubt about it. I mean, the people in Ottawa are going to get on you for that, though, Al, because, of course, Erik Karlsson hasn't had a chance to play in the postseason. But, you know, when Rob sent this topic out, I went and checked my notes from the first round, because I was on that Sharks-Kings series, and I specifically remember asking Peter DeBoer, I think it was at the very first, on the first day of the series, about the evolution of Joe Thornton, but also about the evolution of Brent Burns. And he actually made the point that this is now two full seasons that Burns has played defense. And he really focused on that. The idea that, you know, yes, players like him and Dustin Byfuglien have the ability to move back and forth, but it is a hard thing to do because if you're either in or you're out. That was his point. And he thought that the decision by the Sharks at the start of last year to turn him into a defenseman started him on this path that has led to him reaching the level that he's at. I mean, he was a 60-point guy playing defense last season, but didn't in no way had the impact that he had. And I think he's just gained a great deal of confidence with the regime change in San Jose, because it's not that the old regime didn't give him the green light, but this current coaching staff wants him to go all the time. So he's a big man that's up on the play. When you think of defensemen that are up on the play all the time, you think of the Ryan Ellis, the smaller, darting kind of guy. So to see a 6'5" guy, pushing forward all the time, I think that's what makes him so unique. And he's playing with a ton of confidence. The point that you made, Al, is a really good one. Both him and Joe Thornton, the thing that they have in common is this unbelievable joie de vivre. And again, this is something DeBoer focused on, that these guys love to play the game. They're rink rats, especially Joe Thornton at the age that he's at, to want to be on the ice for optional practices, to be at the rink all day. I mean, they're just lifers. They have that attitude, and I think that they've really encouraged it there. It's fun to play hockey in San Jose. I think the fact that they went in with limited expectations made a huge difference too. All those years when people were picking San Jose to win the Stanley Cup, I think they just felt that, and I think it affected performance on the ice. This year, nobody was picking them. It was going to be either LA or Anaheim coming out of the Pacific. They could just go and play, and it just looks like they don't have a care in the world. And when you can play the game that way, often good things happen.
Well, let me pick it up there, guys, because the other point that I wanted to bring up on San Jose is that traditionally when a team goes to a Stanley Cup final and wins or goes a long way, we often talk about their depth. I think the Sharks have been somewhat unique this year in the way that it's really their core their core has gotten to this point, Al. You know, you look in Pittsburgh, and we're talking about Hagelin and Bonino, but really, you take a look at the scoring leaders right now in the National Hockey League in the postseason. It is the guys that have been there, the guys that have slogged through, that are really leading this Sharks club.
Yeah, it's the story of your best players have to be your best players. And I think that's what's happened here. And there are a lot of them. That's what makes it more the most valuable, that they have so many. When I look at that team, I see Thornton, Joe mentioned him, but I tell you, a lot of guys like to have conversations on overrated, underrated, and it's hard for me to believe anybody's underrated when you're in the NHL. And the fact that you're being considered the most underrated means you're not, except in the case of Pavelski. That's the one case where I can honestly say he's the guy that if they get through this, however far they go, his status gets so high. And as you mentioned, he's an integral part of a core. But I don't think many people outside of watching them every night really know how good. And you watch this and you see, my God, that their top players, he's one of their leaders. He's certainly, and I know it sounds stupid in a hockey market to bring it up, but coming from here, from where I am, when you bring up his name, there's nothing that goes with it because of other names that overshadow him. And I look at him as certainly a key member of that core, and you're absolutely right. Their core players have been absolutely terrific. Even guys that have been given up on in the past have shown they're still in that nucleus.
Yeah, well, one thought on Pavelski. I did a column earlier this year about Ovechkin and what he managed, what he has accomplished in an era where nobody is scoring goals. And in conjunction with that, I prepared a graphic of the highest goal scorers in the league over 3 years or 5 years or something. And Joe Pavelski was second on the list. And so I just made a reference to this in a column, and the editor that was handling it at our paper called back and said, yeah, I can see why Stamkos is in this thing. I can see why this guy is. But Pavelski, and so I sent him the thing, and he said, wow, unbelievable. So, you know, people who should know better don't necessarily know how consistent, year after year, game after game, Joe Pavelski is. And he's just one of the best goal scorers in the league. I mean, we had in Calgary for a long time Joe Nieuwendyk, who had the best hands in the game at the time. MacInnis would shoot the puck from the point, and Nieuwendyk, because of his lacrosse training, was amazing at tipping. He could tip anything. He could get out of the way. He could pivot. He could do this. He was the best in the league for a long period of time at doing that. Currently, the guy that is best at doing that is Pavelski. He is in and out. He finds space for himself, and he gets his stick on the puck all the time. But the other player I wanted to talk about is Logan Couture. Here's a guy who really had a tough regular season. He was injured twice. The first time he came back, he actually came back in Calgary, got hurt like within 48 hours, back on the sidelines, and it took him a long time to get back into the rhythm of the game. In fact, you know, he had been playing with Patrick Marleau as the center of the second line for a long period of time. For a while, they pushed him back as the center of the third line. Marleau was the center of the second line. And after about a month, Couture, it started to come a little bit for him. And then essentially those two lines switched. The Couture line was the second line. The Marleau line was the third line. It gave him depth at center to have, you know, Thornton, Marleau, and Couture, 1-2-3. Very few teams have players of that caliber. And, of course, they all play together on the power play. So what you see, I think, with Logan Couture in these playoffs is a guy who knows and understands that the way to put a really tough regular season behind it is to go out and have a fabulous playoff. Nobody's talking about all of the games that Couture missed in the season. Nobody's talking about how difficult it was for him to catch up to the pace of the game in the middle third of the season. Everyone is talking about the fact that he's leading the playoffs in scoring right now. So I think that's his absence hurt them at a certain point in the season. I mean, they were a 500 team in January. His presence and the way he's playing has had a big impact on why they're having success now.
It is the East-West Hot Stove. Al Morganti and Eric Dehatchuk, our guests. Maybe only have time for one more, guys, and it was a year ago, a little less than a year ago, we were all wondering where Phil Kessel was going to buy his hot dogs in Toronto if he could get along with the media. And all of a sudden, this big harebrained deal happens between the Penguins and the Maple Leafs. They fleece the Pens, do the Leafs. Yet here we are, and Phil Kessel is the leading scorer here in the postseason in the Eastern Conference. He has found a spot. To me, Al, this is the cautionary tale of you just can't necessarily label a player right fit, right place, and it can work. And Phil Kessel has certainly done that here in the postseason, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. But, I mean, he has in the past, too. I mean, playoff numbers were good. You look at it, he's a point-a-game guy in the playoffs, and it just he may not get you there. And you know, much as he's been terrific here, you have to consider that there were times this year you wonder if he was, you know, going to make it through this year there. I mean, it's not like he was good from, you know, line to line from beginning to finish. So I think I do think the coaching change helped a lot, and I think they finally realized just get him the puck and let him shoot. And he'll come along with the team. I think the move out of Toronto obviously helped. The market is in a little less crazy, though still star hockey market, maybe one of the best in the States. But he fits in better. He's a little under the radar with Crosby there. And I think they've handled him very well in the second half of the season. But I'm still not all in on him. I'm not at all. I'm like, it's fine now and it's working out, but I want an insurance policy on him.
Yeah, well, to me, I think it's the way the coach is deploying him. I mean, they wanted him to be a 5-on-5 player when they got him with either Malkin or Crosby. They figured that if he didn't have chemistry with one, he would surely develop chemistry with the other. Well, 5-on-5 through the season, he didn't develop it with either. So when they sort of hit upon that Bonino line, and that was largely because Malkin got hurt and then Kessel was playing, they just moved Bonino into Malkin's spot and they'd made the deal for Hagelin and suddenly it all clicked and they didn't want to change anything. So they've been a terrific line 5-on-5, and then Kessel gets to play on the power play. So he does have chemistry with those guys on the power play. That's been a good power play. It hasn't been as effective as San Jose's, but it hasn't been bad in the playoffs, and I think that that's where he's getting his points. But I do think, too, that he is, to me, he is a support player, a great support player in terms of his talent, but I don't see him driving the bus there anytime soon either. I just think that they're using him in the exact same situation. 5-on-5, he gets really good matchups because other teams have to defend against Crosby and Malkin 5-on-5, so you know, that third line, quote-unquote, has been getting really good matchups in terms of forwards that they're playing against and defensive pairs, and then 5-on-5, and then when they get on the power play, you know, he is a very, you know, he's a sniper, and there are a bunch of guys on that power play, Letang, Malkin, Crosby, that can get the puck to him, so they're giving him the right minutes. He's getting the right amount of minutes 5-on-5, get the right amount of power play time, and it's working. And that's what good coaching is. Good coaching is making the most of an asset that you've got and not focusing on the things that he can't do, but just focusing on the things that he does well. And that's what they've done.
Gentlemen, I appreciate this very, very much. We will talk to you again next week. Al, Eric, thanks for doing this as always.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, guys.
Al Morganti and Eric DeHatchuk, the East-West Hot Stove.